Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Good morning. How is everybody this morning? Everybody's looking a little bit more awake. We're getting there. If you are a guest today, my name is April Colquitt. I'm on staff here at Wellspring. I serve as our Wellspring Kids pastor, and I also serve in our communications team. So I'm excited for what we are going to learn together today. I want you to do something with me. I want you to imagine for just a moment a toddler or maybe a very young preschooler, two, maybe no more than 3 years old, okay? Some of you are parents, or maybe you've spent a lot of time around kids. So just imagine a young toddler, and imagine you have been out for most of the day with this toddler, okay? Maybe you have been going to doctor's appointments and running errands, or maybe you've done something fun, like you've taken him to the aquarium or to the park, or you've gone to a birthday party for several hours. And now it's time to go home. And so you're strapping this child into their car seat, and they start to whine. And then they start to do that thing where they arch their back, and they don't want to be buckled in. And they start complaining and resisting being strapped in. And they start screaming, and you are doing your best and speaking to them in your most kind, reassuring voice. I know we've had the greatest day together. We are almost home. We're going home. And they don't care because they're done. They don't care at all. And so you hurry, you strap yourself into the car, you start heading for home, and they're throwing toys in the back seat, and they're kicking the back of your seat. And they are screaming, so you turn on Baby Shark to distract them, but they don't know it because they can't hear it, because they're screaming so loud. They are gone to the dark side of the full-on tantrum, okay? And about that time, your phone rings, and maybe it's your spouse or it's a grandparent, and they hear this child screaming in the background, and they want to know, what in the world have you done to my baby, right? And what do you say? Nothing. She is just exhausted. She is just exhausted. Can you picture it? Maybe you are digging in your diaper bag for a Snickers bar or anything to give them until you can get them home and put them down for a nap. If you cannot picture that, it looks a lot like this. Okay? This is a child who has had enough. She is done. She doesn't want to be strapped in that stroller. She doesn't care about the squeezy pouch of food in her hand. This person over here, this child who is trying to distract her and make her laugh, it's not working. This child is trying to ignore her and just pretend it's not even happening at all. That's not working either. Nothing and no one is going to be able to make her happy. And she doesn't even realize how tired and hangry she is at this point. This is my daughter. These are my kids, okay? This is not just random people. These are my kids, okay? This is Emily when she was about 13 or 14 months old. Now she's 10, and she's a great reader, and she has a great vocabulary, and she's very articulate. But to this day, she still sometimes does this. When she gets really tired and she's at the end of her rope, she really still can't articulate when she's had enough. And if I were to say, "You're getting tired, aren't you?" she would say, "No, I'm fine." Or if I said, "Maybe, do you think you might need a snack?" "No, I'm not hungry." And sometimes I have to tell you, I can relate. Can't you? Sometimes we have a day, or we have a week, or maybe we have a whole season where we have extended ourselves emotionally and physically or financially, relationally, and we have passed the point of tired and we are entering burnout mode. And we don't even recognize it, but there are some telltale signs that we are going into burnout, and they look a lot like a hangry and tired toddler. Because you start to become irrational, you don't feel motivated, you are easily your emotions are easily triggered, you are irritable, you can't make good decisions, you have a distorted view of reality. And we don't sometimes recognize it, but when we start to feel that way, we want to blame someone and something on how we are feeling, when really the answer is so obvious, it's right in front of us. We're just exhausted, mentally, physically, emotionally exhausted. And what we really need is to slow down and rest. We just need to rest. And if any of what I'm talking about sounds even just a little bit familiar to you or resonates with you, even in the slightest, I want you to know that I have been there. And I know exactly what it feels like when someone says, April, you need to slow down and rest. And my first thought is, are you kidding me? I do not have time to rest. I have way too much to do. I know what it feels like to think that I can shoulder it all and manage it all and do it all and carry it all, and I am doing just fine, by the way. I know what that feels like. And maybe you do too. Because see, we have all, a large majority of us, have been conditioned to believe that we are too busy to rest, right? We are doing important things. I mean, I have watched other people take vacations or take breaks or sit down for a 20-minute power nap and thought, gosh, that must be nice. Wish I had time to do that. Wish I had that kind of privilege. I have been on that side of it where I have thought, I don't have time to rest because I am doing really important things. And I have worn my busy badge with pride because if I'm so busy, what I'm doing must be really important, right? I know what that's like. I know what it's like, and maybe you do too, but it has taken me about 19 years of marriage and 16 years of parenting and 20 years of being in ministry to realize that too busy to rest is a lie. The truth is, we're too busy not to rest. We're too busy not to rest because you're right, we all have incredibly important things to do. But we have to rest in order to do them effectively. We have to rest in order to do them effectively. And so I want you to know that this has not come easy for me. In fact, a friend of mine this week heard what I was preaching on today, and she said, oh, you're preaching this message to yourself. And I was like, yeah, I am. We need people like that in our life who will help us keep it real, don't we? And I'm thankful to have some of those people. This message today is as much for me as it is for any one of you. And it just so happens that we are hearing this word from God today on a day when we are walking into the week on a deficit because we just all lost an hour of sleep last night. I mean, I just don't think that's any coincidence. And I sure didn't plan it that way. That is just how God works. We are not too busy to rest. We're too busy not to rest. And the truth that I want us all to stop down and understand today is this. Rest is where we learn to trust. Rest does not make us weak. Rest does not make us lazy. Rest is an act of faith. We've been in this series called A Leap of Faith, and so I want us to unpack this together today and learn together as we continue this story of a man that we've been looking at for the last couple of weeks during this Leap of Faith series. If you haven't been here for the last 2 weeks, or maybe you've missed a week or two, we're catching up together today. You can catch up online, or you can download our Wellspring app. If you're new to Wellspring, we have a free app that you can download in the App Store, and it keeps you up to date on all things Wellspring Church, but it's very convenient for staying caught up on messages. And so if you've missed the last couple of weeks or one of those, go back and catch up because we're following Elijah's story in chronological order. And so I'm going to pick up today right where Trey left off last week. And if you were here, you might remember that Trey talked about how Elijah's a prophet, by the way. His role, his job is to help other people take steps in their faith, even when it seems too difficult. And he's been doing a really good job of that. And today what we're going to understand is that Elijah still also himself had some lessons to learn about trusting God. So last week we saw Elijah up on the top of a mountain called Mount Carmel, and he had called the whole nation of Israel to the top of the mountain, and he had called the prophets of Baal, which were false prophets of an idol that the people worshipped named Baal. And he called everybody up to the top of Mount Carmel, and he was having sort of this showdown of God's power. He was going to prove to the people that God was who he said he was, that the God of Israel was the one true God and the only one that had real power. And so he prayed, and God sent down fire from heaven and burned up a water-soaked altar. It was this incredible display of God's power. It was an all-day event produced by Elijah himself. And when it was over, everybody hiked back down the mountain, and Elijah seized the prophets of Baal and had them killed. Now, that sounds really harsh, but if you heard Trey last week, he explained the reason why. In the Old Testament, that was before Jesus. And sometimes God saw fit to prescribe punishment to wipe out the sins of people. When Jesus came, he didn't have to do that anymore because Jesus paid the price for sin once and for all time and for all people. So those things don't happen anymore, but this is Old Testament time. And so they hike down the mountain. Elijah seizes the prophets of Baal. He wipes them out, and then he has a meeting with the king whose name is Ahab. And this is where I want us to pick up today. Here's what happened. Elijah said to Ahab, "Go eat and drink, for there is the sound of a heavy rain." So Ahab went off to eat and drink, but Elijah climbed to the top of Carmel, bent down to the ground, and put his face between his knees. Now, there has been a drought for a number of years. And so after this display of God's power, where he sent down the fire from heaven, Elijah is convinced that today is the day that God is also going to finally send rain to end the drought. His spidey senses are tingling, and he's got a feeling that the rain is coming. And so he tells Ahab, "Hey, it's been a really long day, and you should probably go get something to eat." But Elijah does not take his own advice. Instead, he climbs back up to the mountain, and he starts to pray for God to send rain. And while he's praying, he has his servant watching the sky and keeping an eye on the weather. So he says, "Go and look toward the sea," he told his servant. And he went up and looked. "There's nothing there," he said. Seven times Elijah said, "Go back." So he gets down on the ground. He's putting his whole body into this prayer. He is believing with every fiber of his being that God is going to send rain today. And so he prays for a while, and then he tells the servant to go stand on the edge of the cliff and see if he sees any clouds forming. He comes back seven times and said, "Nope, skies are clear, nothing's happening." Finally, the seventh time, the servant reported, "A cloud as small as a man's hand is rising from the sea." So Elijah said, "Go and tell Ahab, hitch up your chariot and go down before the rain stops." The servant's like, "I mean, it's a tiny cloud, but there's something there." And that was all Elijah needed. That's all he needed. He said, "Go tell Ahab he needs to start heading home because rain is on the way." Let's see what happens. Meanwhile, the sky grew black with clouds, the wind rose, and a heavy rain started falling. Sounds like yesterday, right? And Ahab rode off to Jezreel. So God has proven his power once again. It's not just sprinkling. This is not a mist coming from the clouds. It is a torrential rainstorm. The power of the Lord came on Elijah. Tucking his cloak into his belt, he ran ahead of Ahab all the way to Jezreel. So Ahab takes off on his horse and chariot, and Elijah gets this supernatural energy from the Lord. He climbs down the mountain and runs so fast that he passes Ahab on the horse and chariot and winds up back in the city before Ahab. Now, that's about 7 miles, which for context is probably from here to like Market Common, okay? That's a long way. And I am not a runner by any stretch of the imagination, but some of you are. And you know that if you were to run at top speed as fast as you possibly could for 7 miles, it would flatten you. You would pass out. But not Elijah. God has given him a supernatural energy. But even still, I have to believe that he was worn out by the time he got back to Jezreel. But he is not done running yet. Because when Ahab got back to the palace, he told his wife Jezebel about everything that had happened on the Mount of Carmel and about how God had sent fire from heaven and burned up the altars and how Elijah had seized the prophets of Baal and had them killed, and Jezebel was angry. Okay, she was mad. So here's what she does. Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Jezebel is letting Elijah know that she is gunning for him. She wants him dead, preferably by tomorrow. Now, this is not the first time that Jezebel and Ahab have threatened Elijah's life. We actually learned in the previous two chapters that Elijah was hiding from them and that they had been on the hunt for him and God had been protecting Elijah up until this point. Elijah was a prophet of God. Jezebel worshiped Baal, so she's not a fan of Elijah. And so she is on the hunt for him. Only it's never affected Elijah. It's never hindered him. It has never worried him, these life threats against him, until this moment. And this time, when he heard that Jezebel wanted to kill him, here's what happened. Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. Now, if Jezebel had been threatening him up until this point, why is it that now he's afraid? Why has fear taken over this time? It's because he's exhausted. I mean, let's just recap for a moment. He has led Israel in a showdown of God's power on the mountain, climbed down the mountain, seized the prophets of Baal, had a meeting with the king, climbed back up the mountain, prayed seven times intensely for rain, climbed back down the mountain, saw the rainstorm coming, took off running for 7 miles at top speed, got back to Jezreel only to learn, oh, by the way, Jezebel still wants you dead. Is it any wonder that he's afraid? He is so exhausted that he has completely forgotten that he trusts God. If he had paused for even just a moment for a nap, or a snack, he might have recognized what God had been doing through him all this time. But he never even stopped to look back, never stopped to rest, never paused for a break. And so now he is still running, this time for 20 more miles to a place called Beersheba. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. Now I want to pause and just talk about this poor servant for a minute, because Elijah has had him traveling up and down the mountain multiple times. He's had him reporting to the king, making weather reports, and now he's dragged him into the desert for 20 miles, and he's leaving him there. And I just got to think that there is no way that Elijah went to his servant and said, man, I appreciate everything you've been doing for the last few days. You have been so helpful. Why don't you take a day off? I just don't think that's what happened. I think that the servant was so, he's like, man, can we get a second? Can we just like stop for a minute? I think he is done. He's like, I've had enough. Either that or Elijah is tired of waiting for him and trying to wait for him to keep up. And so he's just like, you're done. And he's leaving him. He's had enough and he's tired of waiting on him. So he just leaves him in the desert in Beersheba. Now, keep in mind that if you are a leader, if you have people who are following you, if you are a parent or a coach or a mentor, I just want to take a second and help us see something. Because sometimes we want to run really hard and we want to run really fast to do the things that we want to do. And we got to recognize that not everybody's built to be a runner. Some people have a little bit more capacity to run hard than others, but not everybody's built to be a runner, and that's okay. And if we want to run ourselves into a place of burnout, that's our problem. But if we're in a position of leadership, we have got to be careful that we do not expect the people who are following us to run as hard and fast as we do all the time, lest we burn them out before we ever get to see their real potential. That's just a side note for those of us in the room who may be leading someone else. That's a side note for the runners in the room, and I trust that you know who you are. But Elijah thinks that he is the Energizer Bunny. He has not stopped for a snack. He has not stopped for a nap. And now he's going into the desert a whole nother day's worth by himself. So now he's tired, he's hangry, and now he's alone, which is not a good combination, as we're about to find out. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. I've had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors. Elijah is having a total mental breakdown. He has gone to the dark side of a tantrum, just like a toddler, and he's become depressed because he is so exhausted. He's not seeing things clearly at all. Rather than seeing the good things that God has accomplished through him over the last several days, he's looking way back at his previous leaders in the faith and saying, well, I didn't do what they did. It's clear that he's entered this downward spiral of negative self-talk, and maybe he's thinking, this didn't turn out like I thought it was going to, or maybe he's thinking, I didn't do enough. Jezebel is still out for his life, and so he must think, if she hasn't turned to God yet, I've failed at my job. Whatever it is, he has entered a state of depression, and he doesn't even recognize that it's because he is so exhausted. We can see that because we're on the outside, but he has no idea that he is bordering on burnout or already is burned out, and he's having a mental breakdown. Some of you know, you've been around Wellspring for a while, and you know that we have an annual event here called Kids Celebrate, and it is one of the highlights of Wellspring Church, and I love it, and it's one of my favorite things that we do. We started doing Kids Celebrate in 2015, and I was still pretty new to our staff, and it was the first time that I had ever led anything to that scale of an event here, and so the next day, we were having a conversation about it in our staff meeting. And we were sort of debriefing and talking about all the things that had happened at Kids Celebrate. And I had nothing but negative things to say about it. I mean, I was breaking down into tears. I yelled at people. I was like, nobody supported me. The lobby was too crowded. Nobody knew the songs. The timing was all wrong. And none of that was true. Let me be clear. None of that was true. And so afterwards, Trey pulled me aside and he said, April, what is really going on here? And I said, I don't know. I mean, I was just a mess. And he said, I do. You are exhausted. Go home and rest. And he was absolutely right. I needed to go home and rest. I needed to recover. And I needed to reflect on what God really had done and to see the clear picture of it. You know, we have limits. And Elijah had incredible faith. He was passionate about his purpose. And God had even given him supernatural ability to accomplish his purpose. But Elijah was not God. He had physical and mental limitations, just like we do. And you know, the other thing is that God wasn't angry about it. God never rebuked Elijah for being tired or weak. He never said, hey, Elijah, suck it up, buttercup, because we got work to do. He never said that. He was so compassionate with Elijah in his most weakened state. Elijah has this mental breakdown, and then he finally hits a wall. He lay down under the bush and fell asleep. I imagine he probably cried himself to sleep, right? And then here's what happened. All at once, an angel touched him and said, get up and eat. He looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. Now, this is my favorite part of the passage. And if you're hungry, I'm sorry. Because doesn't baked bread over hot coals just sound amazing right now? It sounds so good. But please see the compassion of the Lord in this moment. Elijah is in no state to make any kind of decisions, least of all what he wants to eat. He's so tired, he doesn't even know he's hungry. And so the Lord just prepares and provides. And what does he provide? Not a plate of vegetables, not a salad, but a loaf of bread. I mean, guys, if that does not make you fall in love with the Lord a little bit more today, I don't know what will. I cannot help you. If that does not make you love Jesus a little bit more today, I mean, I would love to be woken up with a loaf of hot bread right by my head. Can I sign up for that tomorrow morning? I love it. He just provides for Elijah. And with his belly full, he goes back to sleep, this time a little bit more easily. the angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you. The journey is too much for you. See, God wasn't angry at Elijah for being human. He wasn't upset that Elijah needed to stop and rest. He wanted Elijah to stop and rest because Elijah's work wasn't finished. He still had things to do. God had more tasks for him. His purpose was not complete. But if Elijah was going to do the things that God had in store for him, he had to stop and rest. Guys, rest gets us ready for the rest of the journey. We have to stop and rest. So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night. It's good to see that this time Elijah has learned his lesson. He's taken some time to sleep. And he's on the mountain of God. This is the same mountain. Sometimes it's called Mount Sinai in your Bible. Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai is the same mountain where God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. So I think when Elijah arrived on this mountain, he was expecting God was about to give him a new assignment. And this time he rests, he recovers, and he gets ready for what's next. I don't know about you, but I relate to Elijah so much in this part of the story. He is passionate about his purpose. God has given him incredibly important things to do. And he wants so badly to get it right. But he does not trust that God is going to keep working even when he's not. Which is weird, because he trusted that God was going to send fire from heaven. He trusted that God was going to send rain when he prayed for it to end several years of a drought. He trusted that God was going to use a little amount of flour and oil to care for a woman and her son. But he didn't trust that God was going to let him rest. What would happen if you stopped to rest? What do you think is going to happen if you pause to take a break and to recover and to take care of yourself? Will your business tank in a weekend? Will your friends cut you out of their circle if you don't go to one event or one social thing with them? Will your kid get kicked off the team if you miss one practice? Or will it be the end of the world? Will you be a total failure if you take one season off of a sport, students? Will your family go hungry if you don't make dinner for one or two nights? What is the worst that could happen if we pause and take a break? What did Elijah think was going to happen? That God wouldn't send the rain? That he wouldn't end the drought? Did he think that Israel was going to fall apart? Have you ever noticed how we boast busy like it's an honor? When somebody asks us, how are you doing? We say, good, busy, but good. All good things, though. All good things. I'm busy, but doing good things. I recently read a quote from another pastor who said, chronic busyness is not a sign of effectiveness. It's a sign you can't manage your life. Yeah, that hurt my toes, too. It hurt. But gosh, at some point, busyness will interfere with our ability to be effective at what God has tasked us with. At some point, all the things that we are doing interfere with our purpose and the effectiveness of that purpose. Everything you do can be done to the glory of God, but you cannot do everything to the glory of God. You know what I'm saying? And you know how I know that? Because it was God's idea for us to rest to the glory of God. You know, when God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, these were laws to help people live a more righteous life, and we still live by them to this day. They still shape our moral code and the way that we live today. Things like don't kill anyone, don't steal, don't want what your neighbor has. But before God gave any of those commands, he gave a command about rest. The first three commandments were about worshiping God, were about putting God first, and about respecting God. And then he gave a command about routine rest. Here's what he said. For 6 days, work is to be done, but the seventh day is a day of Sabbath rest, holy to the Lord. Every 7 days, that means on a routine basis, God is saying we should rest. He's not suggesting it. He is commanding that we rest. God is saying rest is best. And I don't think it's any mistake that this was the fourth commandment before don't kill anyone and don't steal and don't want what your neighbor has. God knows that when we are exhausted and when we're burned out, we don't make good decisions. We are irrational and we are impractical and things don't go well from there. So God says, rest is what you need. It's a command, and you know what we do? We take that command and we twist it and we say, it's lazy. We take a command from God and we twist it and it makes us feel guilty. That's messed up. And I'm talking to myself. Rest is not lazy. It is obedience, an obedient act of faith. And if you read through the Gospels, we see that Jesus routinely honored this command to rest. He got away by himself, sometimes with his disciples, but often by himself to rest and to recover and to just spend time with his heavenly Father, to be renewed and restored and refilled in his spirit. That is how I know that rest is something that we need. Jesus did it. And if we're following him, we follow his example. We have to rest. Rest is not unspiritual. Rest is not lazy. Rest is where we learn to trust. It is an act of faith for us to stop what we're doing and believe that God is big enough, God is powerful enough, God loves us enough, God can provide enough for us to let go of it for a little bit. Whether it's an hour or 3 hours or 3 days, to just say, God, you are faithful, and I know you are working even when I'm not. This is not you sitting at your desk playing solitaire at work and thinking that you're resting. This is not going to sleep every night like all humans do and think you're going to wake up with more faith, that you're just going to magically wake up trusting God. This is about intentional decisions to slow down your pace. And not just slow down to sleep, but slow down to renew your mind, to reflect on the good things that God has done, to recover from the busyness that we live in all the time. We can't stop it, but we can be intentional about slowing down. And it doesn't make us lazy. It doesn't make us weak. It means we're human. God created us for it, and he wants us to rest. Rest is where we learn to trust. So figure out what rest looks like for you. Maybe for you, it is to get away and clear your calendar for a couple of days. Maybe it's just leaving your laptop in the office when you walk out the door at 5:30. Maybe it is turning off your phone at night so that you're not texting constantly and responding to people and emails. Maybe rest for you is taking a walk or spending some quiet time in nature. Maybe it's going to dinner with a friend and just talking and reflecting about what God's been doing in your life. Rest can look different for different people. In our house, we've learned to look ahead to busy seasons that are coming and to plan for rest before that so that we're ready for what God needs to do through us when it comes. Sometimes it means resting on the back end so that we can recover from everything that we've just been doing. Figure out what rest looks like for you and accept permission to take it as an act of faith, as an act of obedience. Rest is where we learn to trust, and we are too busy not to rest. We've got to stop buying into the lie that rest is lazy or that we have too many important things to do to slow down and recover. That's not true. What's true is that you have too many important things to do not to slow down. If you are still here on this earth, you have a purpose. God has important assignments for you. He has tasked you with big things, and he wants to move through you, but we won't be able to do those things effectively if we don't take some intentional time to take care of ourselves emotionally and physically and mentally, to take a break. So as we close today, I want to challenge you with a question. I want you to ask yourself, do I trust God enough to rest? Do I trust God enough to rest? Do you believe that if you slow down and you put your work down for a little bit, that God is big enough and faithful enough and loves you enough to continue working even when you're not? Do you believe that you serve a God who loves you enough to want to give you a moment to rest and breathe and take a break? He does, and you do, and you need it. There is King David in the Bible shared some things in common with Elijah. Oftentimes he found himself being hunted by enemies and hiding from people who wanted to cause him harm. The difference is that when David found himself running from his enemies or hiding from his enemies, he leaned into God and he poured his heart out to God. And he used it as an opportunity to be reminded of God's power. He used it as an opportunity for God to refill his mind and his spirit and to renew and restore him. And on one such occasion when King David was hiding from his enemies, he wrote this prayer. In peace, I will lie down and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, will keep me safe. God alone is the one who is in charge. And sometimes it is only when we step away for a minute that we can recognize it was him all along anyways. And he can be trusted to keep your family safe. He can be trusted to keep your business safe, your work safe. God can be trusted to keep your relationships and your finances and your reputation safe so that you can rest, so that you can recover, and so that you can get ready for what he has for you next. So your homework today is to ask yourself, do I trust God enough to rest? And walk into this week deciding when and how you are going to take some time to recover. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you that you love us so much and you are never angry when we are weak. Thank you that you never expected us to keep going and going and going, but you have designed us and created our bodies with limits, and I pray that we would stop ignoring them so that we can be effectively used for your purposes. God, I believe you have called us to great things and you want to use each and every one of us. So help us to accept and understand that we will not accomplish the things you want us to until we slow down and we lean into you to recover. I pray that you would refill us, renew us, restore us as we rest and find peace in you. It is in your Son's holy and precious name that we pray. Amen.